Welcome to Rangefinder Radio. I'm your host, Scott Shepherd. Today on Rangefinder Radio, we're going to have with us here, Karen Hirsch. Karen was featured in the June 2011 issue of the magazine. And of course, you can find out more information about Karen, the radio program, the magazine, her article, and everything else going on over at www.rangefindermag.com. Karen, how's it going today?
It's going well. How's it going with you?
Good. Thanks for joining us here on Rangefinder Radio. Great to have you in the program to talk about this very cool article we have here in the June 2011 issue of the magazine with this beautiful sailboat racing photography and all this neat stuff you're up to. Thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you for asking me.
So, I don't want to go over everything that's in the article, but were you really drawn to the water and sailboat racing?
Well, one of my friends invited me to the start of the Mackinac Race, which is the largest and longest race, I guess, of freshwater. So I went with him on a boat, and I had such a good time that I wanted to go the following year, and he had left for Oregon, where he lived. So I asked the PR person at the yacht club if I could go, and she said yes. And then she said, would you like to cover some national championships that are taking place this summer? And I said, okay. And then she gave me names of magazines to contact, and I did, and they liked my photos, and I wrote articles about the races, and I became like a correspondent. Sundings was one of them. It's an East Coast sailing paper.
So people typically think of sailboat racing like the America's Cup, and they're out in the ocean, and I don't think they really relate to sailboat racing on the Great Lakes. This is a pretty big circuit. I mean, these boats and these guys mainly stay on the Great Lakes, and there's like a little circuit that goes around. How's that work?
Well, there is a very large sailboat racing population in the Lake Michigan area in Chicago. And a lot of the yachtsmen also go elsewhere to race. They'll go down to Florida for Key West Race Week. Some go to the Caribbean. A few of them are world-class sailors, and they'll go to Europe with their boats and compete there. But the majority, I would think, stay in Chicago. The yachtsmen that I know, or a lot of them come up from Michigan. Like, there's national championships that take place. I covered one in Muskegon, Michigan, and Chicago's a big place for the sport.
This is interesting. Tell us about the story you have about Ted Turner and the lake, because people think, okay, sailboat racing, you're on a lake, how quiet and majestic and nice and flat, and it's not a big deal. And I guess people that haven't been or haven't seen the Great Lakes don't really realize that, well, it's like a body of an ocean. So, I mean, what's your response to people that think that sailboat racing on the Great Lakes is just flat and happy?
That is not the case whatsoever. It can get very treacherous, and a storm can come up really quickly. The story goes, Ted Turner kind of downplayed Lake Michigan sailing and thought it was like a bathtub. And he was invited to come up and race in this race to Mackinac. When he did, there were gale force winds, and some of the boats were decimated, I guess, and he just changed his tune after that. He didn't say that anymore. And I've been out on the water when it's been very rolly and with white caps. I mean, I haven't been through lightning and thunderstorms, but many times when there's a long-distance race, you experience that.
Now, when they put you guys on a press boat, do they put you 100 yards off and you got to grab a 600 millimeter lens with an extender to grab this? How close to the mix do they put you guys in?
Well, it depends on the race. Well, my favorite times is when the boat that I'm on is small enough that we can go in between the racing boats. And it doesn't create waves or affect the wind, because you're not supposed to be within the race course if you're going to be affecting the boat. A lot of times you go on the outskirts of the race and you fly down to the mark where the boats turn. They take down their spinnakers or they raise their spinnakers depending on which point of sail they're at. And a lot of action takes place at that time. But I've been on committee boats a lot as well, and as a committee boat, it's official, so you can get close to the other boats. Actually, the one time where I got great shots was when the mark went loose, and so the committee boat had to be the mark. So all the boats had to go around the boat I was on. So it was great for photography. Another time I got a cover shot, I was on a committee boat and a boat was coming around at full speed and it didn't exactly get between my boat and the mark and it glanced against my boat. So as it was coming towards us, I was getting a great shot, and then I realized it was going to hit us. So then I went to the other end of the boat real fast. It didn't hit hard, but it was disqualified because you cannot hit the committee boat. That's a no-no.
So, committee boat, how big a boat is this? Is this like a 20-foot boat, a 30-foot boat?
It just depends. The boats that set the marks in the water, which create the race course, can be fairly small. I would say maybe 20 feet, little ones. But you can have speed boats, too. The main committee boats typically are larger, and they hold more people because you have people who are checking the wind, they're doing the clock, they're marking in the boats, they're setting the course. So you have a lot of people on board, so you need a bigger boat.
So definitely, I mean, you're a lot better if you're on a committee boat than being stuck on the press barge with a bunch of sponsors.
Yeah, for this one race, they have very large cruising powerboats, and they have a nice lunch affair with platter with cold cuts and all. But they tend to anchor, and they watch the boats go by like a parade in their fleets because they go off at different times. But it's hard to get good shots that way. You can get some, but you don't get as many dynamic shots as you would if you're actually on a mobile boat and can move from one side to the other. And then those boats also have press flags so that the other boats and the Coast Guard realize that you're official so that they don't bother you. Otherwise, the Coast Guard will chase you down and tell you to get out of there.
So I guess that's another thing that people don't realize, that the Coast Guard's actually on the Great Lakes.
Oh, yeah, for sure. In fact, the Mackinac Cutter is a huge Coast Guard boat, and it typically will sail all the way up to the Mackinac Island. I think it's part of safety precaution to do that. And Coast Guard may be called upon to help rescue sailors who are in trouble.
Sure, typical good old Coast Guard stuff.
Yeah.
So let's move back in photography. What got you started taking pictures? What made you want to say, I want to take pictures for a living, I want to be a photographer?
Well, it all started because I was a foreign language major. I wanted to go to France, and I bought a camera the weekend before I left, and I didn't know how to use it. So when I ended up in this little town in Normandy, they had a camera club, and I joined it. Not only did I learn about photography, we would do excursions, and they showed me how to print in the darkroom. I learned everything in French originally, so I didn't know the names of things in English. And it helped my French, too, because there weren't any Americans in this club. So I enjoyed it so much that when I went back to college my senior year, I joined the student newspaper at the University of Illinois, the Daily Illini, and I did photography for them. And then I got a Fulbright travel grant to go to Spain to study, because I also was studying Spanish. I was with one other person who had a Fulbright who was a painter. I interpreted for him because he didn't know Spanish, and he wanted to meet other artists in Barcelona. And then he introduced me to this one guy who started an international workshop, so I stayed extra time in Spain to study with this workshop. And when I came back to the States, I ended up writing travel articles and had my photos of Spain and France as illustrations of the articles. So that's how I got started as a freelancer.
Let me ask you a question that has nothing to do with photography.
What?
Out of the two languages that you've studied, or maybe more, but between French and Spanish, which one's easier to learn?
I would say Spanish, and you'd hear it, and you'd see it, too, because you see Spanish on the bus in different places.
But you like French better?
Well, it's hard to say. I enjoy both of them. I love France. I adore going there. I don't go that often, I mean, but when I do, I love it. And Spain, the people are very warm. I find them very welcoming. So, yeah, I like them both. They both have their pluses.
Have either of the two helped you in your photography? So if you're not in Spain and you're not in France, but knowing how to speak French and Spanish, has either one helped your photography? So do you think it's a wise choice for photographers to learn a second language?
I think it's a wise choice for anyone to learn a second language. I think it gives you a different perspective. It gives you insights into another culture, and it broadens you. As far as the photography aspect, it depends on what you do. If you do travel photography, of course, you'd be able to converse with people if you went to South America or Spain. I mean, I'm talking about Spanish and French, but it depends. Like, I did a project in China. If I had spoken Chinese, that would have helped me there, but I didn't know anything.
That's pretty hard, I think, to learn Mandarin, right? Isn't that the main Chinese dialect?
You're asking me? I don't know.
I don't know either. I find it interesting about if you can speak a native language to a foreign country, how that would make your trip as a travel photographer better. It must.
Oh, for sure. You could converse with the people. You could get into places that otherwise you wouldn't. It'd be less touristy. Actually, the Spanish helped me a couple years ago in Chicago, where I had a job to do for Citgo. And I guess they're from Venezuela. Anyhow, there was a music group that came to Chicago that was big in South America, and I was supposed to photograph them. But they didn't tell me in advance that the whole audience and everybody was speaking Spanish. It just so happened I could speak the language, and because of that, I talked to the musicians, and they invited me up on stage while they were rehearsing and afterwards. So I was able to get better shots that way. But that is not typical.
Well, it's a good tip, though. Learn a foreign language.
Yeah, definitely. I think it does wonders for you. It really opens up your eyes as far as knowing how other people live, and it's just a good thing overall.
There you go. Learn Spanish. It's a great language. So, really, when you get back from college and you're shooting this travel photography, tell me how your photography expanded from there. Did you look for more travel gigs? Was it just getting jobs in local Chicago? How did your photography expand once you got back from Spain?
Well, I got a full-time job in advertising, and I did photography on the side as a hobby. I joined a camera club, which I'm still active in, one of the oldest in the United States. They just celebrated its 116th year. I joined there because I wanted to have access to a darkroom, and they have two darkrooms right now, and at the time they had more. I took pictures on weekends, and because people knew I enjoyed photography, they would invite me at work to do photos for presentations and public relations. I also studied film and video at Columbia College in Chicago at night, and I was planning to become a producer. So that all kind of fits in with the visual experience, I guess. Eventually, I mean, it took a number of years, but I was asked by a large ad agency in Chicago, which was Footcone and Belding at the time, now it's Draft FCB, if I would want to be their in-house photographer and magazine editor for their internal publication. And I accepted that. I did that for a number of years, and then I spun off on my own.
Wow, how cool a gig was that?
It was very cool. I loved it. It introduced me to a lot of different things because I was expected to be able to produce whatever they gave me. I had to learn really on my feet and did everything from product photography to animatics, and it was excellent. And then I also did music videos for the annual meeting that they had each year. So it was a well-rounded experience, and I was able to meet some celebrities along the way, which I enjoyed. And I especially enjoyed going to the commercial shoots when they were filming commercials. Actually, that's one way I learned lighting. Prior to that, a neighbor was in filmmaking. He was a gaffer. He was one who lit the sets. And he was running for precinct captain. And he knocked on my door. We were chatting. And we became friends. And he invited me to different shoots. So I would watch the filmmakers use tungsten lighting and the accessories, how they filtered the lighting with the different angel spun and used gels. I had never studied lighting and photography. At Footcone, I had to set up the studio lighting, and that's how I set it up at first. And then I added strobes, but I used the C-stands and flags that I learned from watching the filmmakers do what they're saying.
Yeah, lighting is a fabulous art. There's so much you can do with it, and it's so fun.
Yeah, you can totally change the mood that way.
So how have things progressed since you went on your own? And of course, you're doing all this beautiful sailboat racing photography and this whole sort of sailboat racing lifestyle. I know that you're involved with the local yacht club and you're doing some more sailing yourself, but tell me about the other photography that you're doing now.
Well, I do a lot of different things. I do portraits of people. I'm hoping to do more interior decor type photography where my photos would be used as fine art images for interior decor and possibly for art galleries and museums. I would love to be able to join that part of the field. Actually, I went to New York last month to check out galleries, and I visited the art licensing show at the Javits Center called Surtex to get a feel for that. I'd like to do some travel photography and then sports photography. I do other sports besides sailing. And I just like lifestyle, just capturing the moment. I tell people that I tell stories with my photography, and so I'd like to do that for clients as well. So it's twofold. One is working for clients where on assignment where I would actually be telling their story, getting their message out. And the other is doing my thing and doing more fine art. I paint in the computer. I blend my photos with the digital painting. I combine images and come up with something unique. And so I'm hoping to be able to market that. I am just starting out in that respect.
It's great to see you doing so much different, diverse activities and using photography as your art medium. Let's chat about gear. Everybody wants to know about gear. I know you're a Nikon shooter, but let's talk about what you typically use to shoot these boats and what's going on with that. Let's talk about what you use to capture this beautiful imagery.
It's relatively simple. I have my Nikon D200 cameras. On one camera, I have a 70-300 lens. On the other one, I have, I think it's 70-105 or 18-105, something like that. So one's typically for wide angle, and the other one is for telephoto. That's principally what I use. I mean, I wouldn't mind having some other lenses, but it would be nice if Nikon would like to loan some to me. But that's what I have, and they work fine, so that's what I use.
It's great to see that you can go out and do all this fabulous photography, and you don't have to spend $1 billion in gear, and you can do this with something that's sensible and still make beautiful images.
Well, I think that the images start in the mind of the person taking the picture, and there are people who have all kinds of gear, but they don't come up with the great images. And then the Holga camera is being used by some, and they come up with some very interesting shots. And what's the Holga cost nowadays? So I don't even know if they're even $25.
Yeah, $25, $30, $40, depends on what you want. But basically, yeah, it's a half dozen lattes, right? It doesn't matter.
All right.
And I think the point you're getting at is it really doesn't matter about the gear. It's about the photographer.
Yeah, I mean, it's great to have excellent gear. I mean, I would knock it because in the hands of somebody who is a visionary, it's even that much better. But it's not necessary. You can come up with some fabulous images and have very simple fare as far as gear goes. Just basics, and you can go out and shoot. In fact, I don't mean to boast, but I won a competition. When I came back from Spain, from being a student and teacher over there, my first camera was a Minolta rangefinder camera, and you couldn't change the lens. It was a 50-millimeter lens. And there were a couple of guys on a park bench who were just characters, and they looked so typically Spanish, and I wanted to take their picture. Well, they were glowering at me. They did not want their picture taken. I just walked up to them, took one picture, and walked away before they could start yelling at me. And it was a really powerful image, and it won. And it was a rangefinder camera. So you just don't have to have the state of the art in order to get great shots. Now, as far as computer equipment goes, that's something else again. I think it's necessary to keep up with technology there, or you could fall way behind. I go to seminars all the time trying to keep up with Photoshop and with other programs, too, to run the business for marketing purposes, InDesign, Acrobat. I mean, there's so much. I mean, as a professional photographer, the photography is really a small part of the whole business. And I don't think that that is so much stress in schools. I think people idealize about photography, and then if they try to make a living at it, find that it's not as glamorous as they might think.
I love the image that won the Kodak Chicago Daily News Grand Prize.
Oh, you saw it?
I saw it. It's fabulous.
Oh, thank you.
Those guys are definitely grumpy.
Yeah.
So, Karen, let's talk about this personal project that you're working on that I think is quite cool.
Okay. The Passengers Project is one that I've been doing for a number of years. And I bought this little Coolpix camera actually when I was invited to go to China as part of a group of 10 people. And I wanted an extra camera so I wouldn't have to lug around my SLRs. And when I came back to Chicago, I would have it in my pocket. So it was always handy. So on the bus, I would start taking pictures of people who were interesting to me. It kind of documents society because I have people of all ages, from babies to older people and races and different expressions and different relationships. Like there was one grandmother and her granddaughter who were interacting, and it shows the love between them. And then another couple where you could tell that there was some disagreement going on. So it tells stories about these people, and their attire tells a lot about them. I just find it interesting. It also is a record of the seasons because I'm doing all the seasons. So you can see snow out the window or rain and how the summer garb changes to winter coats and people are all bundled up with their scarves and mittens. So it is really like life in Chicago at this point in time. So I like it for that reason. And I've gotten some very interesting shots. So someday I'd like to have an exhibit and a book about it. I do other things too. In fact, it's just coming up, 4th of July, Children's Parade in Chicago. I've been documenting for years and have a collection of interesting shots of kids and Uncle Sam. So that's a whole other thing. People in patriotic clothes, red, white, and blue, and they get all dialed up for this. And there's a big concert with Sousa music, and it's a lot of fun, and it's good for photos.
I think it's really important to do these personal projects, and it's great to see that just because somebody's not commissioning you or paying you to do a job, that you're out looking for things to take photos of and you keep shooting. I think it's right. Very important for photographer right. To keep pushing their craft forward.
All right. Well, as I said, I was active in this photo club in Chicago, which we now call Forum, the Fort Dearborn Chicago Photo Forum. I was president. I stepped down a year ago. And for a number of years, I was the outing chairperson that I shared with another fellow, Gary Levine. And we planned maybe up to 10 outings a year. We'd go all over Illinois and Wisconsin and Michigan and had a ball. And because we have monthly competitions and we share work, we had an outlet to show our pictures, which I think is important for growth and for inspiration. And then, because of it, actually, I fell into doing a calendar of Illinois. I had so many pictures from around the state that I did a calendar for 5 years that was published out of the West Coast. So you never know where your pictures are going to end up. Yeah, Arnold Newman was one of my teachers and a friend, and he used to say, I forget the way he said it, but it was something like a young man is supporting him, meaning himself, because as a young man, he took pictures, and the photos that he took, he would license, and so, in a sense, a young man was supporting him in his old age, himself. So I think that's a good lesson, and that's something that I'm thinking for myself, that I have so many images that I would like to license or to use to help support me now and also be around in the future where appropriate to show how life was in the United States or wherever during this period. Actually, I was part of the Millennium Project, which was an interesting thing at the turn of the century. It was touted as being the first big digital international competition. It was all done online, and there were thousands of photographers who participated from all over the world. And what we did was, on New Year's Eve, 1999 to 2000, we took pictures, and they sent them in, and they were judged, and there was a book that was produced. And then I helped arrange for a photo exhibit at O'Hare Airport in Chicago of 50 of the images. It was one day, and it was an important date and time, and it showed what people were doing all over the world. So I guess that kind of appeals to me. Photography catches a moment in time and saves it if it's preserved for future generations.
That's great. And I think that the more photography that people can do and the more stuff that you're doing, like you said, you're going to be able to bank a library of images. And at one point, who knows who's going to buy what? It's very important to keep shooting and to keep working on all of these projects and to keep moving forward as a photographer.
Definitely. And it broadens your mind, too. I find curiosity helps with the photography, and your camera gives you access to things that otherwise you may never have had access to. So it's satisfying in that respect, too.
So what do you look forward to do moving forward? What do you want to do that you haven't got to do yet? What do you want to shoot that Karen hasn't been able to do?
I'd like to shoot more travel photography. I'd love to shoot more things in entertainment, musicians, celebrities. I've done some, but I still enjoy the world of film, and I would like to take pictures of some of the more well-known people and politicians, too. Actually, I went over to the Obama office in Chicago, the campaign office, and I was hoping to be able to do some photography for them. I didn't get very far. I got to the concourse level, and somebody came down and said, oh, well, sorry. But I did photograph President Clinton and Rahm Emanuel when he was bidding to be the mayor of Chicago. There was a rally a block from my office, and I got in and got some cool shots. So I was happy about that. But I guess I want to photograph people who are prominent, because not only actors, but people in different fields, just people who make a mark on society, who contribute in one way or the other, be it art or politics or entertainment. I think for me, that's important. I have a series of musicians that I photographed, and I'd like to do more of that, too. They have all kinds of fests in Chicago. I photographed the Jazz Fest here last Labor Day weekend, and I photographed Wynton Marsalis. There was just something about him last night on CBS's 60 Minutes. He went to Cuba and was sharing his music there. I don't know. I enjoy photographing all kinds of people. When I had a show on Chicago, it was a retrospective of Chicago, and it included the people, the places, the events. It included neighborhoods. But the showcase of that exhibit was a 12-foot canvas piece that I put together, and it was divided into squares like a quilt, and each square was a different person. And it included people from the street of all ages and races, and it also included Chicagoans who had made a name for themselves, and included Michael Jordan, the mayor, Governor Thompson at the time, Bill Curtis, he's an anchorman on CBS. Actually, he helped get me started at the Sun-Times, but that's another story. Different sports people, and then there was Hetty Ratner, who started the Women's Development Center, who's helped women's businesses in Chicago, Mike Dicka. So it was just like the fabric of Chicago, which was this canvas, and that's what I like. I like the mix.
Sounds like a great project. So let's do this. How do people find out about Karen? Your website, you have a blog, you got some cool travel photos up, you got a lot of neat things going on. Where do they go?
Well, they can go to my website at www.kiranihirsch.com, and that's the initial I. And then if you're interested in the sailing, I have a special sailing site, and that's www.kihphoto.com. Those are the initials. K-I-H stands for Karen I. Hirsch. How convenient.
That is convenient.
My blog is part of my KarenIHirsch.com, so when I do something new, I'll add it to that and I'll make a comment about it. And it's archived, so it goes way back. You can see different things that I've done, including some of the abstracts.
Very, very cool photography here, Karen. This is fabulous work that you're doing, all this nautical images, all the other work. This is fabulous stuff. It must definitely keep you busy.
Oh, I'm always busy. Yeah, I never have enough time to do everything. It's frustrating, but it's not boring that way, that's for sure.
No, and all the great work that you've been doing with the Camera Club and helping other people, I think this is just fabulous stuff. Really great to see you here featured in the June 2011 issue of the magazine, and I really appreciate you joining today. Thank you so much.
Well, thanks for inviting me, and it was my pleasure. So look forward to hearing this in the future.
Well, there you go. The ever fabulous Karen Hirsch. Beautiful photography, a great inspiration, and a very cool article about her in this month's June 2011 issue of the magazine. And of course, you can find out that information about Karen her article, the magazine, the radio program, and everything else going on over at www.rangefindermag.com. I've been your host, Scott Shepherd, and we'll be back next week with more great Rangefinder Radio.